WILL's Illinois Newsroom, this is 217 Today. I'm Farrah Anderson. It's Thursday, April 6th. Coming up, we'll learn more from Sarah Fentum about what doctors say are the best standards to use when treating transgender minors. That story is coming up in just a few minutes. But first, these headlines. Governor J.B. Pritzker congratulated Chicago Mayor-elect Brandon Johnson for winning Tuesday's election and said he looks forward to working with him. Pritzker said Johnson overcame expectations by beating former Chicago Public School CEO Paul Vallis and that he will be a change from past mayors.
He's somebody who comes out of an activist background. I think there's a lot to admire about him. He's a teacher. And I believe that he will bring a certain vibrancy to the city. So I'm excited about that.
He said Johnson represents a shift toward progressive candidates, which has been seen in other Democratic Midwest states as turnout increases among younger voters. The Illinois Department of Corrections obtained do not resuscitate orders from prisoners even when they were not of sound mind. Shannon Heffernan explains.
When someone signs a do not resuscitate order, saying they don't want certain medical interventions to stay alive, they're supposed to be informed, alert, and not under any outside pressure. But according to an independent monitor, prison officials had people sign those documents, even when they had profound dementia. The monitor alerted corrections officials 9 months ago, but the department still has not created a new policy to address the issue. And the department has not said whether the allegations have been investigated. The problem is particularly acute because of the aging prison population. Thousands of people behind bars are elderly, and around 50 people in Illinois prisons are over 80 years old. Shannon Heffernan.
Negotiations continue Friday between Eastern Illinois University and its faculty union, but the bargaining session will take place off campus because the union has called for a strike starting today. Illinois Newsroom's Jim Meadows reports.
EIU University Professionals of Illinois President Jennifer Stringfellow says the decision to strike came after the administration declined to extend a Monday bargaining session, which the union felt was making progress. She says the union membership agreed at a meeting the following day that now was the right time to strike.
It was not our negotiating team alone, but many people feeling that it was just not good enough. Not good enough at all for all that our faculty have done to make sure that Eastern stays open, stays active, stays teaching.
The union cites compensation and workload as their main concerns and a new contract. In a statement, Eastern's administration says it's taken steps to ensure that students can complete the current semester and graduate on time. I'm Jim Meadows.
In addition to the strike beginning at Eastern, another faculty strike at Chicago State University has been going on since Monday. Three communities in Fulton County took the majority of damage from Tuesday night's severe thunderstorms and tornadoes. Emergency Management Director Chris Helly says Bryant saw the most damage, with widespread damage to homes, as well as downed power lines, poles, and signposts.
Right now we're working to make sure we understand where all the damage is. Area is. We're working with the National Weather Service. Buckhart Fire Department is the lead agency on the damage assessment, resource coordination, and incident management.
Helly says there were four injuries reported, including one person in critical condition. There are no fatalities reported at this time. Lewistown and Table Grove also sustained damage. Still to come, we'll learn more about how transgender patients, their families, and doctors say many people are getting the wrong idea about gender-affirming care. That story is next on 217 Today.
In the third season of the Masterpiece Regency drama Sanditon, our heroine, Charlotte Haywood, returns to her resort town with a new fiancé in tow. But life gets a bit complicated when she meets up with an old flame. This hit drama is based on Jane Austen's last incomplete novel. The final season of Sanditon is full of more adventures, scandals, intrigue, and above all else, romance. You can stream every episode now as a friend of WILL. Learn more at will.illinois.edu/passport.
This is 217 Today. I'm Farrah Anderson. Age-appropriate gender-affirming care for transgender kids is supported by the American Academy of Pediatrics and the American Medical Association. But in Missouri, such care has been attacked by lawmakers and other officials who say it's harmful to minors. Those efforts have come as critics have condemned the care at St. Louis Children's Hospital's Transgender Center. Missouri lawmakers have also introduced legislation to limit gender-affirming care. As St. Louis Public Radio's Sarah Fentum reports, transgender patients, their families, and doctors say many people are getting the wrong idea about treatment.
Tony LaMantia told his parents he was a transgender boy when he was 12. He was assigned female at birth, but knew it didn't feel right.
And so I spent a lot of time, you know, advocating for myself and being like, this is what I want. This isn't a phase. This isn't like something that I saw somebody else on the internet do and they, you know, they were cool and popular, so I should hop on this train.
He had a supportive family. He started socially transitioning around the house in Webster Groves, wearing men's clothes and using he, him pronouns. He eventually came out at school. He says he intentionally took his time.
There was the risk of, like, what if I changed my mind? What if I tried to go back on it? Some of these things are irreversible that you do, and I wanted to make sure that I, you know, didn't regret anything.
LaMantia was considering different types of gender-affirming care. That's medical and psychological treatment and social changes that support a person's gender identity. Doctors recommend it for people whose gender assigned at birth doesn't match their perception of themselves. LaMantia says gender-affirming care can include well-known options like hormone replacement therapy and surgery, but also mental health treatment and social transitioning. After years of therapy and doctor's visits, he eventually started taking testosterone, which deepened his voice and allowed him to grow a mustache. After he turned 18, he got a mastectomy.
Not everybody goes for the medical aspect of a transition. You know, transition is different for everybody, but for where I wanted to go with it, I was like, the social transition part, once that's out of the way, I definitely want to medically transition, and so then I just went from there.
In Missouri, Republican lawmakers and officials are trying to limit gender-affirming medical care for kids and teens, saying it's harmful and experimental. But transgender people say those characterizations don't match their own experience. Medical professionals say gender-affirming care shouldn't be rushed.
It's not a one-size-fits-all. It's a very individualized process. It's a relationship and discussion over often many years.
That's Jeremy Goldbach. He's a professor and clinical social worker at Washington University who studies mental health in LGBTQ kids and teens. Goldbach says, with very few exceptions, doctors don't prescribe hormone therapy or surgery for kids before they reach puberty. Many kids socially transition without any medical treatment first. Some families of young trans patients decide to give children puberty blockers, which delay their development. He says providing gender-affirming care of all types reduces mental health problems and the risk of suicide for many trans and gender nonconforming people.
As we get closer to puberty, that becomes a much more pressing issue. And that tends to be, in the research, when kids, the emotional and mental health implications of not transitioning really intensify.
After puberty, patients could start hormones when they reach their mid-teens, but doctors say surgery for trans people under 18 is rare. Dr. Maddie Deutsch is the president of the American arm of the World Professional Association of Transgender Health, the organization that distributes widely used standards of transgender care. The 260-page document is considered by many medical providers to be the gold standard for providing gender-affirming treatment.
It's quite clear that this is not something that you just wake up one day and walk into a doctor's office and get. If there are clinics that are doing that, then they're doing it wrong.
Deutsch explains the standards aren't rules or regulations. Even people within the medical community sometimes disagree about whether they're the best course to take.
You know, you have to thread the needle on this work. I mean, someone who's properly trained in doing this work is going to be neither someone who's going to say, hi, nice to meet you, here's your testosterone, but is also not going to be someone who's going to sit and stroke their chin and stigmatize or otherwise pathologize someone. And
experts say because every person has a different concept of their gender and a different medical history, hard and fast rules about when a person should start hormones, for example, are difficult to make. Most kids who are trans or gender nonconforming socially transition before any medical treatment. The World Professional Association of Transgender Health Standards recommend minors show persistent gender incongruence over months or even years before they receive care. Deutsch says the organization's standards recommend informed consent from parents and kids about the risks of puberty blockers and other procedures.
You want to be a blank slate. You want to hear what they have to say and help them help figure out what is really going on inside this person's head.
Some are worried providers aren't following best standards, though. In February, a former worker at the Transgender Center at Washington University, one of the only places in the region to provide gender-affirming care to minors, accused the clinic of rushing people through treatment. In an online op-ed, she says the clinic's workers were not informing patients of procedures risks or long-term side effects. A WashU spokeswoman did not respond to requests for an interview about the clinic's medical care for trans patients. The university's released a statement saying practitioners there are held to the highest professional and ethical standards. Patients in the St. Louis region say it took months or years before receiving hormones and other medical interventions, so they're confused when they hear accusations of people being rushed through treatment.
I absolutely was informed over and over again of any sort of risk by both the therapist and any endocrinologist I saw. The hurdles people have to go through to get any sort of care is pretty preventative. Of rush.
It took years to get some of the things I wanted. And so I was just kind of shocked when they were like, it was very easy. You know, they're just giving stuff out to kids.
It's not easy. There's so much bureaucracy involved. Just trying to call the right person, trying to get a referral. It was so difficult to even just get a hold of their office.
That's Joey Borelli, Tony LaMantia, and EH. We're just using his initials because he fears discrimination. They're in their late teens or early 20s and all started receiving care when they were teenagers. Borelli says he wishes people would trust young patients can understand the magnitude of their medical decisions.
I mean, that's the kind of decision making you do kind of with any decision or a large decision is like, do the benefits outweigh the risks? Oh yeah, absolutely, 100%.
Despite the hours of treatment and the back and forth with insurance companies, EH says it was worth it.
The experts in their field say that my identity is a real identity and that this is actually how we help people.
But he and other patients in Missouri are worried about other trans kids that will come after them and if they'll be able to get the same help. I'm Sarah Fenton, St. Louis Public Radio.
And finally, in your forecast, meteorologist Andrew Pritchard says today will be mostly sunny with a high of 54 degrees. That's it for today. Reporting today contributed by Cameron Cutinello, Shannon Heffernan, Jim Meadows, Tim Shelley, and Sarah Fentum. Music by the Kilbourne Alley Blues Band. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. I'm Farrah Anderson. 217 Today is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening, stay safe, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.